Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. I am your host, Cody. We are starting a new month, and we're starting a new theme. So the month of May will be the theme I told you about last week, which will be book series. So basically any book that has, I guess, really one or more sequels to it. The first, I don't have all of them narrowed down just yet, because I'm trying to figure out which ones I want to do. But I do have the first three, or at least three for the month set up or ready to go. Not that you can catch up with reading of these to catch up to me talking about them, because otherwise you will be reading a lot of books, and very long books. But this week I'll be talking about a book I briefly talked about on a couple other episodes of the things I was reading. Now I'm going to go into a little more in depth about them. And that is The Passage Trilogy by Justin Cronin. Consists of three books so far. I'm sure it's only going to be three books, but the first one is The Passage. Second one is The 12, and the third book is The City of Mirrors. Basically description of the book series. It is a book that tells a story of a vampiric virus that, when infected, will turn you into a vampire of sorts. They call them virals, because it's a viral contagion. They call them Drax or Draculas. There's Dopies, which I'll get into. And yeah, that's basically it. It takes place mainly in the United States. Very little of it takes place outside. It is not what I thought it was going to be. And that's not a bad thing. I was thinking one thing, and I got something completely different. The television show that is based on this, so it's what basically led me to start reading this. Was I heard about this show called The Passage, starring one of my favorite human beings, Mark Paul Gosselaar, or Zach Morris from Saved by the Bell. In the TV show, which I've explained a little bit on a bunch of months ago when I first started reading this, is when it first starts off, I'm like, okay, yeah, you can easily do this. And then I noticed a lot of differences, which is always going to happen in adaptations. I realize that. But, yeah, there's no way they're going to be able to do what they're doing in this this book whatsoever. Because it's gonna be very bizarre at one point, because it jumps in time about 90 years, and I can see them trying to do it, but I don't know if they'll be able to do the same way they did. They only got 10 episodes. Did they cancel this already? Stay in the Light. I wonder where it actually ended up being. I don't know if that's good ratings or not, but it's over 5 million the entire time. Lots of negative. Well, 62% out of 100 based on 17... critics reviews on Metacritic's not too terrible. I'm looking at the show itself, and I don't know. It doesn't say here if they're going to continue on or not. It just says 10 episodes didn't seem like a whole lot to be able to get too far into the story, because it is it's pretty pretty in depth. Oh, Ty West did an episode. I didn't realize that. That's pretty cool. Ty West has done a bunch of cool TV shows. He's directing Chambers too. Interesting. He's one of the guys who he's done a lot of cool horror stuff. It doesn't matter. I'm not talking about the TV show or Ty West. And I don't know if the TV show has been greenlit for more or not, or for more than just those. I have no idea. But so the I got sidetracked. Sorry. So I'll give you the setting. So the passage begins in the near future and details the apocalyptic and later post-apocalyptic world that is overrun by vampire-like beings who are infected by a highly contagious virus. What begins as a project to develop a new immunity-boosting drug based on a virus carried by an unnamed species of bat in South America eventually becomes the virus that transforms the world. The novel begins in 2016 and spans more than 90 years as the colonies of humans attempt to live in a world filled with superhuman creatures who are continually on the hunt for fresh blood. So that's the setting in short synopsis of the first book. The cool thing, so he does a lot of there's a lot of, I don't want to say tropes, but there's a lot of similarities to the vampires and stuff, but there's the fact that the sun hurts them. If you pierce their heart, they die. You cut their heads off, they die. But the thing about the vampires in this, they're super strong in general. Their bodies transform to look very unhuman like. Their necks elongate, their teeth fall out, and they get rows of crystalline type, like almost crystal clear teeth. Just rows of them, just lots of them. Their facial features melt away, so they're just kind of like amorphous in a way. Their fingers and their toes elongate into claws. They have the ability to clamber onto almost anything and stick to any surface, the smallest of crevices. They can jump real high. They're extremely strong, like I said. And the virus itself can take minutes to hours, depending on the severity of it, I think is what it is. You go through a hemorrhagic state where basically you start to get a ridiculous fever, and your essentially blood starts to boil, and then you go into convulsions, and then your body transforms. Like I said, usually it takes mere minutes. Up to like an hour or so, I think you can survive for the most part. And in that time, you can be killed in many ways, you know, shot through the head, the heart, decapitated, all that fun stuff to kill you. Once you have transformed, your skin is very impenetrable to many things, except for what they call the sweet spot, which is in the sternum, which is the weakest point there. And then their eyes can be pierced as well. But they're very, very fast, very strong, very bloodthirsty. They hunt in packs, or as they call pods, which is usually three or more, usually three. And they give off a faint bioluminescence, which is a green glow from their bodies, that helps. Well, if you're lucky enough to see them ahead of time, you can see them that way. But they do glow. Obviously, in the dark, it's more prevalent. In the open, it kind of dies off because, well, light, they need stuff to reflect off to really be seen. So the story starts off with you meet, let's see, I guess it starts off with Project Noah, you meet Brad, who is he's FBI, who is tasked to go to prisons and get death row inmates and sign them up for this program to essentially lessen their, like, basically to, they live out their, not to lessen anything, to live out their lives being test subjects for experimental drugs. So, and that's all they really tell him. So when you first meet him, meet Brad, he is on the way to I don't remember where I guess it's in Texas. Yeah, it's in Texas because he hates Texas. Or did he just get back? I think he might have just got back. I can't remember. It's been a while. But anyways, his job, him and his partner, they are FBI agents. They're basically in charge of finding the inmates or bringing the inmates to the facility in Colorado. You have Paul, or you have Brad, or Bradford Walgast. You have Phil Doyle or Philip Doyle, who is his partner. You have Amy, who is the 6-year-old girl who gets infected at one point with a modified version of the strain. Actually, I might be even wrong about the mod. I think hers was modified at all. When it was first discovered, it was first found when these four people were infected with it while they were on a getaway to South America, where they were going there because they were dying of cancer. Like, it's like the kind of like a, I don't want to say last wish thing or like make a wish thing because they're adults, but they went there, they were terminally ill, they were infected, and their cancer was taken, was eradicated, but they were they died of essentially what they were looking at as hemorrhagic fever. And I think the longest one that lasted was like 40 something days. But what's crazy about it is their thalamus, which when you're an adult is inert, but when you're young is one of the things that makes you your body heal and you repel bloodborne diseases, I think. I'm not a doctor, so I can't remember. I don't know, but they talked a little bit in the book. So through a gentleman named Lear, a scientist named, I guess you could say, where is his name? Where is Lear at? Well, Lear is listed somewhere on this. Where is Lear listed on this list of characters? It doesn't matter where he's at on that list. I'll go here. He is the head scientist involved in this. He then talks a friend of his, a colleague, in a way, to go to South America to find this virus so they can study it to try to make this cure-all elixir out of it. You find out early in the book as things are unfolding that Lear's wife, now dead and gone, she died, and that's one of the many reasons he's trying to essentially get this disease or this cure-all, because he believes it can extend human life and cure all sorts of different diseases, cancers, and all sorts of things like that. You learn more about her and the three of them in the third book, which I'll get to, is crazy what happens. But when Timothy Fanning, his friend and colleague, goes to South America, they do run into this group of bats, but these bats are very, very aggressive, and they kill and tear apart their victims. Well, Fanning is one of the only people who survive. Actually, I think he's the only one who survives. And he has very much symptoms like the first set of patients that were found with it. But the difference is he didn't have the he didn't die from the hemorrhagic fever. He transformed, and he transformed into the very first version of the virus. And he is, unlike a regular viral, he does have the elongated teeth, the crystalline skin, but he's larger in physically in size. So he's bigger than a normal human being. Again, he loses his features. His face becomes loses a lot of detail. His hair falls out. His body expands. Shoulders get wider. He gets taller. His arms get larger. His legs get larger. His head gets larger. His fingers grow out, become claws. So do his toes. His neck elongates as well. And so they bring him to the compound in Colorado where they want to do experiments on him. So they're testing his blood. They need other test subjects because they can't just inject it in somebody. So they come up with this plan to get death row inmates and then redefine the serum. So sure enough, all the way down the line, the 12 subjects then become transformed just like Fanning did. There's technically 13, Fanning is considered zero, so there's 12 others, and also including, not including Amy, who's technically the 13th, but also technically the 14th, but the Geneva's considered one of the 12. So the 12 consist of, the very first one was Giles Babcock. He is, the crime he's committed and convicted of is one count of capital murder that was in Nye County, Nevada, and he was born in Desert Wells, Nevada. And that comes into effect in a little bit. I'll tell you why. Then there was Joseph Morrison, who is also arrested for one count of capital murder. He's from Kentucky. You have Chavez, who's convicted of one capital murder, two counts of aggravated sexual assault with a minor. He was from he was arrested in Nevada, but he was born in New York. You have John Baffis, who has one capital murder, doesn't make different murders. He's from Florida. You have Terrell, who's from Louisiana. You have Winston, who was from Minnesota. Sosa from Oakland. Eccles from Washington. Lambright from Washington. Eccles is from Washington. Lambright is from South Dakota. Martinez is from Texas. Reinhardt is from Montana? I think is what that. I don't remember my states very well. And then Anthony Carter from Texas. So one of the many things you learn about the virus. Well, okay, actually, I'll get there in a second. So everything's going really well. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, not really. Things seem to be, you know, not too bad, not too bad off. But to keep the secret of these 13 subjects, the government gets this idea that they need to obviously study them. So they bring in military personnel, private contractors, but to be janitors and caretakers for the 12 of 13, but the 12, they bring in pedophiles, and they're chemically neutered with certain drugs, and they're there to basically record data, do feedings, clean up after the 12. And so what happens is there's a lot of shit that goes on, and you learn more about him, but it doesn't matter. You can learn about it in the book, and there's lots of detail. He goes into backstories and flashbacks and all sorts of crazy shit. But they start getting these visions from essentially the 12, again, 13, but 0 and the 12. And they eventually use these visions to control these keepers and then help them break out. And so the 12 plus 0 escape the compound, tear everybody apart. And then while they're doing this, Amy has been brought in. And she is given a variant of the same one that that Fanning had, but she doesn't transform. She actually goes into a coma and then slowly comes out of it, and you find out that she has essentially become immortal, and she stops aging. She has this weird ability to communicate with animals before she got the virus, which is just so strange but an interesting thing. Brad helps her escape captivity. They go on the run. His partner is killed helping them escape. He drives them from Colorado to Oregon to this where he grew up, which and he went. He knew about this this camp that used to be there that he goes to, hoping it's still there, and it is. And they hold up there for a few months. Before the shit starts hitting the fan, you start to find out that the virus is being spread, because as the 12 escaped, they are taking up, as they call the different victims, and every basically 1 out of 10 is converted over to a viral, and then it spreads from there. Every one of those, every one out of every 10 victims becomes converted over as well. And then it just spreads across the United States. At one point, someone sets off a nuke in the northern Washington, Canada area to stop people from... They're trying to stop the virus from spreading to other countries. And so air travel has been shut down. There's martial law, all this crazy shit. California secedes from the Union. Texas secedes from the Union. Amy and Brad are holed up at this camp for many a month, and then eventually when the nuke goes off, the blast rockets through the area. The concussion shatters a window, blinding Amy. Not permanently, but temporarily, because she will heal. But Brad gets a really bad cut on his leg, and it gets infected. He's dying, and he actually gets killed by a bunch of virals trying to lead them away from Amy. Amy escapes. And then we jump 90 years in the future, and you learn about this first settlement called First Colony, set up in the New Republic of California to essentially house all young people. From different areas. One of them, the one we go to, is the relocation camp for Philadelphia. They get on trains and they go out there and they live their lives. We jump ahead basically 90 years. You learn about what happens from a point of view of a girl who was in Philadelphia and came here, lived their life out, and they have these big walls and these lights, sodium fluorescent lights or something like that. But anyways, that keep the virals at bay, and they live their lives in astonishing horror, trying to eke out existence, and with basic weapons, crossbows, knives, anything bladed, to protect themselves. And they train, and they lived this weird existence in this the first colony. They have the power comes from a turbine farm, wind turbine farm, in the adjacent valley, through an underground buried cable. And then Amy shows up, but having aged very drastically, well, not aged very drastically, she appears to be a 15-year-old girl versus the 6-year-old girl we last saw her as. She encounters our main hero throughout the three books, after the fact, because Brad is dead. And taken up, really. I'm not going to lie to you. He's been taken up and he's a viral, but you don't really meet him again until the end of the book. So you think he's dead, but then you find out. So, spoiler alert. So she meets Peter. Peter is... she saves him from some virals when, at one point, he thinks his brother Theo is killed. And then, so this is what I was talking about earlier, why I was talking about where the virals or the 12 come from. It is discovered over these 90 years by First Colony, whenever someone is taken up, if they change into a viral, they will, within 7 days, return to where they're from, so where they lived. And so one of the things you have to do is, if a family member is taken up, it is your duty as the oldest male, I believe, in the family, to stand for them and wait. And so you are tasked to kill them when they return as a viral. So Peter does stand for his brother, who had stand for his father. His father never returned, and Theo never returned. Fast forward, some stuff happens. A group of them decide they're going to go with Amy, and they're going to go to this place in Colorado they're getting a signal from, so they make their way there. There's this snafu where they run into, when they're in Vegas, they get kidnapped by this group of people who are working with Babcock, the first of 12, and some shit goes down there. They end up escaping on a train that gets them a little farther in. Then they make their way to Colorado, where they run into the first regiment? No, what is it? I can't remember. It's basically this new army out of Texas that is basically trying to rebuild and find people. That's the first they've seen in a long time. They bring them in. You find out that one of the characters has secretly been taking the vow to become one of them. She does, even though they're all supposed to be male, but that was before whatever. They battle off the virals, make their way to the signal, which it finds out is nobody's there. It's the old compound that actually Amy was essentially born in via the virus. They meet up with a nun who helped Amy. She has become infected as well, but she was given a serum to essentially make her immortal, much like Amy is, but not as special as Amy. She helps them set a trap for Babcock. They blow up Babcock, killing all his spawned virals, as they call the million. And then they get that virus. Alicia gets infected. They use one of the vials left to give her to bring her back, and she becomes a lot like Amy, but not as special as Amy again. She is essentially a humanoid version of the viral. Her eyes glow yellow. She has not super strength, but she's stronger, faster, can jump higher. Unfortunately, has a thirst for blood. But it's not as bad as the viral. She doesn't go crazy if she doesn't get it. She never transforms. And their whole plan was they were going to come. A bunch of them were going to take that, and then they were going to go after the rest of the 12. But Amy then destroys the vials, knowing how terrible growing up with this has been, making her and Alicia the only two that have it, and then they go on their business. And that's essentially where the first book ends. The second book is the 12. I've run out of time. I don't want to talk too much more about it. I'm trying to keep these shorter. than I rambled on about. The second one jumps you 5 years in the future. A cast of new characters, some old characters, returning characters. You find out that... So the end of the first book, Theo, his wife, and their son, Sarah, Hollis, Sarah who's pregnant with Hollis's baby, are all at the New Mexico, the Roswell, I want to say it is. Is it the Roswell? I want to say it's the Roswell garrison. And they get overrun by virals, and everybody is, almost everyone is slaughtered. The only person that really makes it out is, Hollis with Theo's kid, so basically Peter's nephew, Caleb, and, it's super sad because everything's going really well, and then just this nightmare of a situation happens, and that's where the book ends. But when the second book starts up, they're in Texas, in Kerrville, Texas, at this essentially walled-off city, which is part of the Texas Republic. And Peter has joined up with the army, along with Alicia, but no one really trusts Alicia because she's a viral. Amy has taken up with the sisters at the convent for the... Or sent to the orphanage, where Theo, son, now dead Theo's son, Caleb lives, and then whole plan of this is they find about this compound that is somewhere in Iowa that is working with virals to get people up, to capture people, and. They're working with humans who are referred to as red eyes because they drink the blood of certain infected, and it gives them longer life and heightened sense. Well, not really heightened sense, it's just longer life, essentially immortality in a way, as long as they keep drinking the blood. And they have these slave laborers that are basically of humans that they force to do different things like make biodiesel and construct things, and they're building this big temple for the 12 to come to where they can essentially be safe from humans and be fed humans and animals in a ritual, all to appease Zero or Fanning. And then so our heroes go there, stop them. You find out that Sarah is still alive, as well as a bunch of handful of people who were attacked at Roswell, but actually not killed, but they were taken and brought to this Iowa place. And she has given birth, but her baby didn't survive. Turns out her baby did survive. And so she finds Kate, her daughter, Hollis and Peter and Alicia and Michael and Amy and I'm forgetting some people who were there too. All end up going there, making a plan with the resistance known as Sergio because it's insurgents, but... They're off the name. They think someone named Sergio is doing it. It's hilarious. Really clever. They defeat them. Head back to Kerrville and groups because there's thousands of people there. Essentially, that's the end of book two. Book three starts off around the same time. Gives you a kind of an overview of where everyone's been, what's going on. Then get told about, my favorite part about it is you get to learn about Fanning's history and how he got to where he was. He started off as this very smart kid in Ohio. Mercy, Ohio is where he was born. He then goes to, Harvard? No, is it Harvard? Where does he go? Some big league school. I can't remember what it is right now. In Boston. Is that Harvard, right? I think that's Harvard. Doesn't matter. He goes to college. He then meets he meets Lear, his second year there. They become, we'll say, pseudo-friends. He meets Liz, who he falls in love with, who is Lear's girlfriend and soon-to-be fiancé and wife, who he finds out is sick. And then Lear is obsessed with it and is trying to make a way to fix it. Promises he will and all the things like that. So you learn about him. You learn that he's because he falls in love with her. He leaves them behind after they get engaged. Completely leaves them behind. He goes off to live his life. He becomes a well-known scientist. At one point, he then is hears about Lear kind of losing his everything because he gets obsessed with the curing his now again sick wife. Liz or Elizabeth, who Fanning is of course in love with still, even after many failed marriages of younger women who look just like Liz. Liz contacts him. They have an affair. They plan to run away together. On her way to meet Fanning, there's a lot more to this, but I'm just going through real quick. On her way to meet Fanning on the train, she has an episode. She is hospitalized. She asks him to call him. She dies, never getting a hold of him. They never get a hold of him. He waited all night for her at the train station at Penn State, or not Penn Station, Grand Central Station in New York, thinking she changed her mind and Lear found out or something. He gets drunk, runs into a former student of his, who then he starts making out with. When he goes back to her apartment, she kind of brushes him off because of her kid. He ends up getting in a struggle with her because he's drunk and angry, ends up killing her essentially by accident. And then trying to cover it up. Essentially, the police are on his trail, but they can't really figure out who he is. They can't identify him as that. He then agrees to go at this point because Liz passed away. Lear comes to him for help. He says no at first, and then he's getting pressured by the police who are closing in on him for the murder. So he agrees to help him out. He ends up going to South America where he gets infected by the virus and so on and so forth. And then City of Mirrors, that's all, again, this is all City of Mirrors, the third book. You learn about that, and then you jump to 23 years later. Peter is now the president of Kerrville, Texas. Michael has been missing for 20-something years. No one has seen him. Alicia's been missing ever since Iowa. In book two, we learn about her. She's actually in New York with Fanning, plotting to kill him, but she can't. She made the sword, which is pretty cool, but she can't bring... She's controlled essentially by him, and she can't kill her maker. But she formulates a plan. He's formulating a plan. All the virals die out because they think they win, because they blew up the 12 in Iowa. And so for 20-something years, they don't see any virals. They believe they're all gone. We know differently because we know Amy's alive, Carter's alive, but Carter and Amy have locked themselves in a ship, being helped by one of the main characters. And all of Carter's millions, what's left of them, essentially dopeies who are not really well... They're kind of like... dumb in a way. They're not as vicious and as violent as the regular virals or Drax. He keeps them dormant. They're building a plan to go after Fanning. They know Fanning's planning something as well, and he's basically waiting till the humans fall into false sense of security, and then he actually releases a bunch of virals who then convert all the people who've moved out of Kerrville, the protection of Kerrville, the walled city, into these settlements, converts the majority of them into virals to rage an attack on Kerrville because he believes Amy is still there, or at least they know where she's at. Amy comes out of hiding. She is transformed fully into a viral, but they find out that if she drowns in water, she reverts back to her human form, but still with the immunity and the strength and things like that. So she goes to help with the Alicia, who is not trusted by anybody really, and the dopeies from Carter to try to defend Kerrville. But Fanning knows this little secret that no one else does, and there's all these tunnels and exploits under the ground, and a massive attack underneath, coming up underneath the ground inside the walls of Kerrville, slaughtering thousands of people in the process. the last couple hundred, few hundred, evacuate to what we find out is a big ship that Michael's been working on for the last 23 years, or 20-something years, to basically fix up and be able to escape the mainland, because he believes there's a vision that another character has that leads to a promised land, which is an island off the south of Brazil-ish area. Well, it would be safe. And Peter, Michael, Alicia, and Amy mount an attack to go kill Fanning. They end up killing Fanning. All of his virals die. And some shit happens that I don't want to tell you about, because you might read them and you'll like it. And then the people that escaped on the boat end up finding the island, living out their lives there, and you jump to the year, 1,000 years in the future. 3,000 years in the future, I believe, is what it is. Oh, no, 1,000 years. It's 1,000 years afterwards. The University of New South Wales, Indo-Australian Republic, is where the hub of humanity is at. And there's this conference in the book three. At the end of book three, you find out about how humanity has risen out of the ashes from the people who made it to the island, and they have spread out. And they have not repopulated the Earth, but there's enough out there. And they've been slowly going back to North America to figure out what's going on. They have these books, one written by Sarah Fisher, called the Journal of Sarah Fisher. And then there's the Book of the Twelve written by Pym, who is the adopted daughter of Sarah Fisher, who later marries adult Caleb, and they have kids. And so it continues on there, and they end up going back to North America because they see a small house on the beach of California that has, in rocks, a message says, "Come find me," or "Come to me," which is a statement made by Amy several times over. And so the new main character, Logan, goes there. You find out Logan is actually a descendant of Peter. He's a descendant of Theo, Peter's brother, who is the father of Caleb, and so on and so forth. So he goes there, meets Amy. Amy's about to die, but she wants to tell them all about it, and then they learn about the history of the virals from Amy 1,000 years later, and then she passes away, and boom, that's the end of your story. There's a lot more in there, but I cannot go over all of them because they're very long. The book is roughly about 766 pages in hardcover, 879 in paperback. That's the first book. The second book, which I believe is longer, is page numbers not listed there. I don't know why. And neither is the third one. But anyways, they're very long. Audiobook-wise, because I did both Whisper Sync and regular, more of the audio than anything else because I've been slacking, was 26, 28, and 26 hours again, I believe. Very long, but very, very good. A lot of fun stuff, a lot of throwbacks, a lot of cool links to each other and in different pasts and stuff like that. It's a really fun series. I enjoyed it a lot. I like the way they do the vampires in it, and I actually liked it a lot. And it's a good time if you want to check out a vampire story that's not your regular old vampire story, and definitely different than some of the more modern day ones. But I highly recommend them. That is the Passage Trilogy by Justin Cronin, not to be confused with Justin Cronin the politician, apparently, but the writer, who hasn't written a whole lot of books, according to what I found. He only has six books. The Passage, the 12, and the City of Mirrors, the Passage Trilogy, are all really excellent books and extremely long, so I can see why it took him forever. But he has lots of accolades. He's won a couple of awards, I believe. He even got a pretty good write-up from Stephen King, which was fun. That's basically it for this week. Next week, I will be talking about, speaking of Stephen King, a Stephen King series that I'll get into next week. I'll talk to y'all about it. That I liked a lot too. Also turned into a TV show, so that's interesting. But I'll talk to you about that next week. So that's it for this week's episode of The Awesome Cody. I have been your host, Cody, as usual. And like I normally say, at the end of all these, let's be awesome.